Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. You know, I don't like to rattle on with those statistics too often, but they sort of tell the story of literacy in the United States. 14% of U.S. adults, about 1 in 7, cannot read. They struggle with everyday reading, writing, and math tasks. They struggle as well to find work. Government can pump as much money as it wants into American industry and ingenuity to stimulate the economy, but Americans who cannot read will not share the bounty in the 21st century. And it costs money. Joining us today to talk about the challenges to literacy in the United States and how much more challenging it is during these economic times is Alan Toops. He's executive director of the Ohio Literacy Network. Welcome to the show, Alan.
Thank you, Ann. It's a great pleasure to be here today.
Also, Joy Watson. She's executive director of the Columbus Literacy Council. Joy, I'm glad you could join us.
Thanks, Anna. I'm glad that I was able to be here.
And coming up a little later, Dawana Martin. Dawana is a former adult literacy student who learned to read to get her GED. Dawana, I'm glad you could be here today.
Thank you.
And also, Dan Oziel Vasquez, he came to the United States in 1999 on a prospective student visa. He has, in 2007, he was awarded the Ohio Civil Rights Commission Award for Outstanding Service to the Hispanic Community in the Greater Columbus Area. He is also a student of the literacy programs in Columbus. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
I guess we could just start off generally, because often we all start off with the different definitions of literacy. And I'm wondering, Alan, if you could start out and just tell us, you know, what do we mean by literacy today?
Well, I'm glad you asked us that question, because it's really a very important one. The framework for literacy has shifted over the years. If we take a look at the need for GED completion, certification to get into employment opportunities and open the doorway for that, we talk about literacy in a very different context from an employer's perspective these days, from a business and industry perspective, as well as what it's like to be a struggling adult who just got displaced from your 20-year job. So it's really an issue of getting people ready to participate in whatever the economic benefits are from the 21st century changes in our economy. It's making them what I would call working learners. The ability to be a worker in a company, but understand that learning has to happen continually, that you have to always be prepared for what shifts happen in your business or industry or where you may sit in terms of your skill set. So I think it's a very, very shifting kind of definition these days. It's not that kind of old, warm and fuzzy, come to our program 3 hours a day, 4 days a week, and we'll take care of you. I think now it really is much more about on demand. And the things that I need today to get myself ready for tomorrow, I can't wait for that longer-term kind of short and fuzzy thing to happen.
With all the displaced workers now in the United States, are you finding there's an influx of people into the programs who were okay where they were at while they were there, but now that they're out looking for another kind of a job, are seeing where their shortcomings are?
Absolutely. And my wife doesn't like the idea of absolutely, but it really amounts to that there is indeed that demand that they see. My skills don't fit where I need to be now in today's economy, and how do I get to that point in time? And what services do I look for, and where do I go? Do I come to a local program for regular classes? Do I go online to learn from different resources that are available that way? Do I blend them together? And I think the model that we are shifting to as an organization is one that's more blended, where services are delivered in a lot of different ways that meet your needs as the learner rather than a structured program approach.
Yeah, Joy, one size doesn't fit all anymore.
It truly doesn't. And you know, back to the question where you ask about are we seeing an increase, the Columbus Literacy Council, we're serving more students than ever this year. And with our adult basic ed, those that already speak English that have lost jobs, we have seen a dramatic increase in those students. But as Alan mentioned, they're coming in and testing at such a low rate where they were able to be in a job before, but their literacy skills weren't what was required. So now to even get them employed, we were really, really focused on teaching them the things they need to be able to go into and apply for a job.
And when it comes to literacy and teaching them what they need to apply for a job, is it just about learning to read and write, or is it also about understanding, I don't know, computers and applying online and understanding the vocabulary that might have changed?
It's understanding our culture today.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas 10, 20 years ago, your friend could help you fill it out. You might be able to take an application home. Now employers want to see you doing that online. Then you have internal meetings, and they want you filling out that information on the screen. I was recently recounted a story where an individual went to a place and applied for a job, and he took his pen and filled out the application on the screen. And he was coming to us because he needed literacy services. And, you know, I think that just goes to show that, as Al mentioned, literacy is not just the English language. It's understanding the culture that we're in and being able to be functional in that culture. It's not just the GED. They've got to know some basic computer skills along with the language skills to be able to read that on the screen.
We're talking about literacy. It's never been more important, especially in our challenging economic environment. If you have a question or comment, my guests are Alan Toops. He is he's executive director of the Ohio Literacy Network, and also Joy Watson. She's with the Columbus Literacy Council. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, when I think of a literacy class, I think that kind of that stereotypical people go to a classroom and they're sitting there and they're listening to a teacher, and whether it's English as a second language or preparing for a GED, you're still kind of sitting there in a classroom, and that's not necessarily the case anymore, is it, Alan?
No, as a matter of fact, Joy, it's not. As Joy was talking about, the fact that it is about, you know, learning culture. It's about how to become a good employee of an organization. So it's workplace skills. It's the ability to be part of a group and know how to participate actively in your work setting, as well as the credentialing that it takes to actually get in the front door. On Monster, a year ago, there was only one job out of the 600 that were posted that month that you could get without a high school diploma or GED. And so the pressure for our displaced workers who were able to be in factory jobs and retail positions without that skill no longer had that luxury. So they have to be basically working on all of those angles in order to be productive and to have an opportunity to be employed successfully. So it's a very competitive arena, and that means that they're looking for services that take place across the spectrum. Tutoring when they can get it, individual help when they can get it, in a program structure when it fits their schedule. But when they've got one or two or three, you know, kids at home and children to take care of and family pressures, it's hard to devote your time to the more traditional approaches. So you need this idea of blended learning, where you can learn in different environments at different times that suit the way you have to live your life today.
But, you know, Joy, not everybody learns the same way. And particularly, and I also think about teaching adults. You're tired and you're worn out. I mean, going back to school under the best of circumstances is a challenge. So I'm wondering, particularly the more we know about, for instance, learning disabilities, the more I think the challenge, the greater the challenge becomes. For instance, an adult with a learning disability, I know what the school districts spend and invest in kids who struggle with learning disabilities. What about adults? How do they do it?
Adults have some of the same challenges. It's just, in addition to the challenges the schools have, adults have their life that they're leading. So I really believe it's a much more difficult scenario for teaching them because they have life that goes on around them. One of the first things that's always done is we do assess to see what their learning disability is, and then we have methods to be able to help them and work with them. But it does require a full spectrum of services that's available to them, trying to offer the one-on-one, where most individuals that did not succeed in school didn't succeed for a learning disability or for some other reason that the classroom structure simply did not work for them. So simply putting them back in a classroom structure is not going to be effective. Being able to place them with the one-on-one tutors on computer-aided learning, small group settings, and being able to provide those services to them in the right arena where it fits best for their schedule, because getting the service to them at the right level is important, but having it to them in the right arena is also just as equally important.
You know, a lot of people think that if you didn't get it when they were paying for it in public school, too bad. You know, it's too late now. We've got to focus on the kids that are in school now, and you'll have to just get by. What's the advantage to everybody else that we have literacy programs for folks who didn't make it in school? And I guess I'm talking about folks who grew up in the you know, American public school system right now.
I think the strongest advantage is if they can receive literacy services, even if they never achieve a GED, if they can get services and improve their skills, they are better parents. Statistics show that parents that are literate have the capability of improving the literacy levels of their children. And so if we're looking to change even the school systems, having the parents involved in programs just helps the students that are currently enrolled, such as their children.
And economically, businesses, they lose a lot of money to illiteracy.
As a matter of fact, they do. 38% of the top 100 Fortune companies have employees that perform at or below skill levels that basically help them become profitable. So they have a very strong investment in helping their employees become more literate in their workplace as well. So there's a loss of productivity, you know, a loss of income and loss of bottom line to major corporations because folks don't function at a level that makes that company successful. I think the other thing to remember is that when you have adults who don't have literacy skills in the home life, their kids are five times more likely to drop out of school and be less successful in general. But I think the other thing about this whole concept of learning disabilities and issues that relate to adults is the idea that there are multiple barriers, as Joy pointed out. It isn't just one thing that we can fix. They may have some vision and hearing problems as well. They may have attention difficulties. They may have visual stress syndrome issues that really make it difficult for them to get along. Many of them have self-accommodated, and that just means that over the years they've adapted to what works for them. The problem is that may not be successful in the things they need to do tomorrow to make a better life for their children or themselves.
You know, before we go to the break, I wanted to go over what we know about the statistics of illiteracy in Central Ohio. I know I mentioned earlier that it's about 1 in 7 adults nationwide. Is that about what it is in Columbus?
It's 16% of the latest report was 16% of Columbus residents lack individuals lack the PROS literacy skills to function in daily life.
Meaning to fill out a job application.
Correct.
Right. Translates into about 150,000 Ohioans here in Central Ohio alone. Another 290,000 are at or below a basic skill level.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
It's a significant number when you look at the number of folks that basically are out there looking for employment. That means that any one time, 43% of them need real simple basic skills in order to elevate themselves or their family.
Another statistic that is always interesting is the percentage of people who are in prison who are illiterate. Something like in the 60%?
Well, if you look at Ohio statistics, and that happens to be one of my home runs since I worked in that system for so long, about 40% of the folks who come into the Ohio system test at or below a sixth grade level, and only 50% test at an eighth grade level. So you've got a 65 to 70% non-high school completion rate on top of that, and another 65% that never held a sustainable job. And so their barriers are really significant as well. And it's compounded because you're taking all of those folks who couldn't figure out a way not to be arrested or not to get through the criminal justice system, and they're now all in one place. And so what do you do with them? You provide educational services, you provide learning disabilities assessments, you provide as many different resources as you can, but they still come out needing more skills.
We have to take a break. When we return, Joy Watson, Executive Director of the Columbus Literacy Council, and also Alan Toops of the Ohio Literacy Network, and then joining us, Dawana Martin and Pastor Dan Ozio-Vasquez will be with us to talk about their experiences in literacy programs in Central Ohio. If you have a question or comment, want to tell us about your experience, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Go for rich conversation on the topics that matter most. The radio is more responsive than the water cooler, and we take your calls. I'm Neil Conan. If you're talking about it, we're talking about it. Join us for provocative talk on the issues you really care about. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And Talk of the Nation will be here from 2 until 4 on today's edition of the program. What's changed, what's next, and how patients and insurance companies are adapting to the new health care law. That discussion on Talk of the Nation at 2 on WOSU 820 NPR News. It's 55 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:20 this morning. Showers are likely throughout the day, cloudy skies and a high of 63. More rain showers tonight and a low of 57. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about literacy this hour. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And you know we're on Facebook, too, if you want to comment or have a question or comment there. All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page is ready, willing, and able to assist. Funny cuts. Let's talk about those. They've been massive. Just as there's this huge influx of people coming out of the workforce looking for a leg up in terms of literacy, you have, well, fully half as much funding as you had a year ago, right? Is that about it?
We had a 65% decrease in funding. And it wasn't just all from one source. It was, you know, a little bit here and a little bit there, but when it combines, it was substantial. And for our organization, it caused us to have to look at things and reevaluate how we deliver services. But you're right, the hardest part with the funding cuts are the students are still there. The need is still there, and it's even stronger today than it was. Our enrollment has gone up 150%, and we're only halfway through the year.
I agree totally with Joy. The funding cuts have been significant for nonprofits like ours all across the state. Last week, Miami Valley Literacy Council closed their doors for the first time in 25 years. They simply didn't have enough funds coming in to sustain their model. Now they're looking at how do they reorganize themselves for volunteer work, for reducing their actual classroom time, and looking for volunteer instructors. And the same is true for our organization. Doing online learning, doing the kinds of work we do as a referral service across the state of Ohio, does take a lot of funds. It does take a lot of donations. It takes a lot of time and effort and energy to find grants, to get support from corporate partners. It's really a difficult issue these days to keep all those things going in this critical environment.
And a lot of people are volunteers in it, right? And always have been.
Yes. One of the strongest areas the council has is our core group of volunteers. We were started 40 years ago based on volunteer support. That has continued. But this year we've also seen an increase. We have 815 active volunteers working with us. 350 of those individuals are meeting with students at least twice a week. So the support from the community as far as individuals giving their time has increased. But we've also had to depend on that now as our only model for delivering an instruction because there's not the funding there to provide the classroom with a teacher.
And as we talked about earlier, people with learning disabilities and other issues, a volunteer is great, but they're not necessarily qualified to cope with those kind of problems.
Not at all. We use the volunteers primarily with our English as a Second Language program because for those individuals where they're learning a language skill, we do believe that if you can speak the language, you can help teach the language. But the individuals that were in our school systems and did not function well in there and for whatever reason need additional help with learning English and reading and writing skills, they really do need someone that has been trained and is certified to work with them with their particular skill set and needs.
Alan, funding for literacy programs used to go through the Ohio Department of Education, right? And now it goes through
the Ohio Board of Regents.
Why the change, do you know?
There were some issues that Governor Strickland and his cabinet basically looked at. And one thing they looked at was very critically where adult services should sit. At the time, the Department of Education had the adult basic literacy education funding from the U.S. Department of Education. But as the governor looked at the different issues, what he really believed was that K-12 should do what K-12 does best. And he basically plucked, in a sense, the whole adult education arena from the Department of Education and moved it to the Board of Regents so it could be with other adult-related services.
Are you satisfied with that? Does that make sense to you?
Actually, I think it's done a couple of things that are very positive. One, it certainly has raised the awareness of the need for adult basic literacy at that state level. Because now it's really one of the cornerstones of the Board of Regents University System Plan. But on the other hand, as happens when you become elevated as as part of an organization, you also have to deal with the very different kinds of things that take place. As a result of that change, last year there were 118 funded programs across the state of Ohio. That's now down to 67. And there are roughly another 10 or so that are English as a second language only providers. So the system itself has been collapsed by about 43%. Now, those are program consolidations, program closings, subcontracting out to service providers that used to run full programs. It's a whole myriad of different combinations. But the bottom line is it's still a lot less, which means there are more demand for services, as Joy pointed out, less seat time available across the system, And so you've got this huge influx of displaced workers. The last 2 years alone, Ohio's had 658,000 people laid off. Where do they go for services? Where do they shop for these kinds of critical skills they're going to need to build if they want to be there when that business opens back up again?
What is your outreach like? How are you reaching? Are you even able to reach out to people, or do you not even have to because they're coming in faster than you can take care of them?
Well, at the council, we don't have to. We receive an average of 30 phone calls a day. And we have sites, we've got 16 sites that are up and operating right now, but we have other locations that the city council's calling us in Whitehall. They need a look. They want something in their community. The library system, different libraries are calling. They need someone to come out and operate a program because the need, whether they're calling us or working through their local community, the community's contacting us, that there's just a tremendous need. So right now, we're not even doing any advertising.
And the same is true for us. Our outreach reaches about 2.5 million Ohio families on a regular basis. Our online directory, online services have served over 18,000 people looking for resources. Our online learning system last year alone served 25,000 adults across the state of Ohio. So they're there, and they're looking, and they're really hoping to get services in a lot of different ways.
But something like that online learning services, that may not be around by this time next year.
That's very possible.
Because of the funding.
Because of funding issues.
About $8 billion shortfall at the state government, at state level. Is that what you're talking about? Is that what?
Not only that, but just the fact that many programs want to really see these kind of seat and chair outcomes. And when your indirect service providers are doing all volunteer work, it becomes very difficult to document that time on task and how many students did you put in that chair that month. And the outcomes that are required of that are pretty stringent, and understandably so. Bottom line, though, is that those services, as good as they are discrete. There just aren't as many of them, aren't as many seats available. In Columbus, for example, we went from 9 funded state programs down to just 3.
Correct.
And so that collapse alone just tells you there isn't just as much capacity for the system in the same way that it used to be. And I think that's a critical issue that organizations like Columbus Literacy Council, Miami Valley Literacy Council, and the Ohio Literacy Network struggle with on a daily basis.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about literacy and some of the challenges that the literacy organizations in Ohio are going through right now, particularly with funding cuts and with the influx of lots of displaced workers over the last couple of years. If you have a question or comment, you can email us at allsides@wosu.org, or you can call us at 614-292-8513. And Jerome, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I struggled with reading most of my life. And in my 20s, I was finally diagnosed with Irlen syndrome. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's a perceptual disability. That's actually in the brain. It's a timing error in processing light.
Mm-hmm.
And I was spent all my life in, you know, special ed classes and stuff. And I'll be on up front about this. You know, I eventually became an Irlen screener. And it's been really hard to get people to consider it, even though 50% of low-efficiency readers test positive for it. Pilot studies have shown that 70% of prison populations test positive for it. I've done a little work for the Rehabilitation Services Commission, but not much. It's so cost-effective because if you get a specialist in learning disabilities to sit down with a kid, but you haven't resolved the perceptual disorder, you know, you can help that kid till you're blue in the face, but they're just not seeing the page. Irlen syndrome has taken off in other countries, but not the United States, and I'm wondering why.
Okay, thanks,
Jerome. And I'm wondering what I can do to help, you know, get this to people who need it. It's been really slow to develop in Ohio, especially. I'm wondering why.
Alan, are you familiar with this?
As a matter of fact, Jerome. I'm an Irlen screener myself, and
okay.
A lot of my research with Laura Wiesel at PowerPath has been in looking at these disability issues. Irlen screening is slow to take off for a couple of reasons. One is that neither the American Association of Optometrists or ophthalmologists actually believe it exists. There hasn't been, in their mind, enough definitive research yet to demonstrate that. However, if you go to England, you go to Australia, New Zealand, you'll find they screen public school children for Irlen syndrome.
Is this where they use, like, opaque or
colored overlays.
Colored overlays.
Yes. It's a very simple process.
I've heard of that before.
And as Jerome said, essentially it's the fact that the occipital lobe doesn't process light the same way. Cells become overstimulated. So it looks as if it might be dyslexia. It looks as if it might be attention deficit disorder because the outward behaviors are all the same. Very difficult attention spans. Reading's a real problem. They struggle with words. Things happen on the page that just seem weird to them. And they're so used to it, they don't tell you that. But screening for it's a simple process. It takes less than 5 minutes and can be done pretty much anywhere.
Is it pretty done routinely in literacy programs in Ohio or not yet?
Most Ohio programs have had the opportunity to be screened and trained in that process, yes. Mm-hmm. And many of them have. The application of it depends on a lot of different factors, how they intake their students, what they do with them. As a matter of fact, the Columbus Literacy Councils work very closely with PowerPath and Laura Wiesel in setting those screenings up because I help do that myself as well.
Okay. Joy?
So I was just going to say that we've worked with Dr. Wiesel, and we do implement that for our students because I just believe that anything that we can add to finding out or resolving a problem or eliminating that as a point for them can help them overcome the barrier and continue to work toward literacy.
We have a couple of emails, one from a listener comment. The respect for literacy and the love of reading starts in the home. My parents owned very few books, but every single member of the family had a library card as soon as he or she was old enough to get one. Question: isn't it true that the Dominican nuns have been running a literacy program through the Corpus Christi Parish on the southeast side of Columbus for years now?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They're one of the more successful volunteer programs around. They have about 160 to 200 volunteers working periodically in that program. Last year alone, I think they had about 100 of their students pass the GED. They really specialize in the English as a second language population in particular. Okay. They're very effective. Sister Sean, they do great work out there. And we do a lot of work with them. We refer volunteers. We help them with training issues. We help them find other resources. So we, as a coalition statewide, provide those kinds of services to all the folks sitting here. We refer folks to the Columbus Literacy Council.
Right.
It's one of our jobs.
I want to reintroduce Dwana Martin. She's a former GED student. Dwana, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into the GED literacy program.
I'm 35 years old. At the time when I decided to go back to school, I was probably about 33 years old. I've always wanted to obtain my GED, but didn't have the time. I was a young parent. One night was watching television and saw an ad on Time Warner Cable for GED on demand. And with my life and five kids, I only have two, I raised five. Mm-hmm. With five kids, that fit me very well. So
it's like a miracle. Anything would fit someone who's raising five kids.
Yes.
You said that with a straight face, but I couldn't let you get away with that. So what about that program fit for you?
With five boys, my house was hectic all the time. So when they would get to sleep at night, that's when I would be able to concentrate. The on-demand channel allowed me to have that time at night. 1-2 o'clock in the morning, where I could study, where I could watch the on-demand shows and see how to do math and understand geometry. Not only that, I had the ability to fast forward and rewind. So if I knew something, I was able to fast forward that. If I didn't understand it the first time, I was able to rewind back.
What about school for you didn't click back when you were in school in the first place? You didn't graduate, obviously.
No.
What didn't work for you?
Actually, I ended up having my son at 16 years old.
Okay.
So having a son at 16, I ended up trying to make it work until the 11th grade. After that, I was kicked out of my home, so I had to get a job so that I could find a place for me and my son to stay. Thank God I found a private owner who trusted me to move into a half a double at 17 with my son. Worked at Kroger's and worked at a retail store. And from there, I had two jobs, had to find daycare. There was no way that I could make it back to a classroom setting.
So you weren't struggling, actually, with literacy at the time?
No.
But where would you say So you had no problems then. So getting back, it was just for you, it was just a matter of access to education at that point.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it was. It was definitely a problem with access. And not only that, it was just managing time. Yeah. I was young and trying to learn to manage time.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Sarah, welcome to the show. You're from Ethiopia.
Yeah. I try so many literacy programs, and I really need math for my GED and everything. I never found that my level math. I try a lot of, like I said, a lot of different literacy programs, and it discouraged me so much to go to school, and I dropped out. I have 5 children, and I send them to school, and myself, I go to school, and I would like to fit in between working and taking care of the children and going to school and get my English, my math, so I can take GED test. My English was good. I really, that discouraged me, and I dropped out.
Well, why do you think, you know, what do you think the problem was?
The problem was they don't have a lower level math. They have GED math, which is high for me, which is very high for me, and I know very little about math. I used to go to some churches where they give English. I asked them, I talked to my teacher, I talked to everybody. They said, oh, we are sorry, they can give math at the library, go there and participate. But I work. I have children. Right. I drove all the way to school, and now I have to look another location for my math. I would appreciate, not only me, so many people would appreciate, if they have some teacher that shows up a few days a week and teach math.
Are you talking about, Sarah, like math, like addition and subtraction and multiplication and division, the basic?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Joy, is that you're nodding your head. That's a problem.
It is a problem. It's something that we offer at our site, but it is a problem. And it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier with the state's new plan and the message the chancellor has given. They are seeking to provide education for everyone. It is a wonderful plan, but much of the plan, as I view it or understand it, has really focused on those candidates that are truly pre-GED capable. Mm-hmm. And that's not the prison population that Al mentioned. That's not the students that we're seeing. Those are students that are already functioning at an eighth grade or higher level, that they're now going to move those through a GED program, get them graduating a GED. The individuals that are coming in with an equivalency of third grade, sixth grade, on a language skill, most of them, if they are an ESOL student, at least for our site, mm-hmm. the bulk of ours had no written language skill whatsoever.
Sarah, was that your issue? You had no written language skills, and also you had no math? I mean, did you have any education in Ethiopia before you came here?
Yeah, Ethiopian education in American is completely different. We have, like, Chinese written. It doesn't have nothing to do with Latin writing.
Okay.
But I have been in this country for a while, and I can read. I can read any book. I understand any English word.
You speak beautiful English, right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And my other problem is when they teach us, they are teaching us all the English grammar. And you can, I think, like, even if you are first language is English, it is hard to speak correctly. They want you to pronounce correctly, perfectly. With the way it was, I think people for I speak 6-7 another different language, but this English is, you will never know. Always when I am taking my test, I wasn't doing spelling wrong, or that mm-hmm. really holds me back. Mm-hmm. Holds me back. I wish there is easy way. I'm an adult, so I can. They can test me that I understand everything I need to understand. I don't have to be perfect grammatically in language speaking. I don't have to be perfect. So I qualify for my GED so I can go to school. And mm-hmm. I am already, I work with home health care, and I provide for senior and sick people, which I love to do that. I would like to go back to community college and take some kind of dealing with the sick people or things like that, training, like mm-hmm. LPN or... But for this math and my English, like, I cannot tell you, like, where goes what. It all confused me, and I mm-hmm. just disappointedly, I walked mm-hmm. away of school.
We have to take a break, Sarah. I appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Take care and good luck. Hang
Thank
in there.
You.
Okay. We have to take a break, like I said. If you'd like to give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. When we return, we'll meet Pastor Dan Ozio-Vasquez. He is an ESL student, a successful ESL student, I imagine. And we'll take your questions and comments as well. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Director Ken Burns returns to his exploration of America's national pastime that he began with his landmark 1994 PBS series Baseball. Now Burns updates the series with the 10th inning. This new two-part, four-hour film tells the tumultuous story of our national pastime up to the present. It celebrates baseball's new golden age and sheds light on one of the game's darkest chapters, the steroid era. The series begins Tuesday, September 28th at 8 on WOSU-TV.
And this is WOSU 820 NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides will be here, and we'll learn about how autumn brings a bounty of local produce for local gardeners. We'll talk about delicious and varied recipes and how you can and freeze fruits and vegetables to enjoy them year-round. That discussion begins at 11 on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from the law firm Isaac Brandt Ledman & Teeter, offering legal services to Central Ohio since 1936. Isaac Brandt Ledman & Teeter, big enough to win, small enough to care. On the web at isaacbrandt.com.
56 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:42 rather. Showers are likely throughout the day today. Cloudy skies and a high of 63 degrees today. Rain showers are likely tonight and a low of 57 degrees. Morning rain for Tuesday, then cloudy in the afternoon and a high of 65. All Sides continues on WOSU 820.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about literacy in Ohio and the nation. It could be better. The nation ranks pretty low. I think in the 70s out of 183 or 185 nations that measure such things. Not what you would think for the greatest country in the world. The last caller, Sarah, was concerned about her math skills and frustrated that, in on top of being an English as a second language student, she wasn't being taught the basic math that could give her that stepping stone to succeed with higher math to pass the GED. We have an email from Bob now. He writes, literacy is generally understood in terms of a level of comprehension of printed words, and literacy in that sense is essential for the sort of dialogue on which democracy depends. In contrast, math literacy is essential for economic performance on which healthy citizenry depends. I helped to develop a quote-unquote refresher math course, which many of the American students told me they had never taken before, and many of the Japanese students told me that they had learned in the 10th grade. What about math literacy? So back to what Sarah said, Joy.
Well, we offer math literacy. The dilemma becomes when an individual is learning language skills, they have to learn them for a functional skill set. So our ESOL population, we really work hard to ensure that they learn functional skills for day-to-day life. We want them to understand the addition and subtraction necessary to balance a checkbook. We want them to understand what our denominations of bills are, what our coins are, and how to do the math to ensure that they're getting the right type of change from a purchase. It's functional. It's life skills based. But I often believe that an ESOL student that's looking to move forward does have to spend a significant amount of time honing the grammar skills at the higher levels so that they're capable of passing the GED, to where when they're ready grammatically and language skill-based to enroll in a GED program, what they are missing is the lower math to get them at that level. But it's hard because a person's skill set in math is not always directly correlated to their skill set in language. So there is a gap there, and there is a need for services in that area.
Now, Alan, you said that your organization offers online math
tutorials. Through the Ohio Literacy Network's website, through GCN Learn Free, one of our partners. That's Goodwill. That's their free website. They offer basic math practice so that you can basically learn number function, number correlation, and relationships, and you can do those independently. You can take a tutorial that basically walks you through the steps, even interactive with some of the lessons where you can actually manipulate on the screen itself. So you can go to our website at www.ohioliteracynetwork.org, click on the Learn button, and you're already shopping for the services you need. It's as simple as that.
Okay, we'll post that website on our website, wosu.org/allsides. And, you know, just to remind listeners, if you don't have a computer at home, you can use the ones at the library. There's always some place to go. So first go to that website, go to the library if you need to, and check it out. Now I want to introduce Pastor Dan Oziel Vasquez. Dan, you came to the United States in 1999 on a prospective student visa. You worked with an individual ESOL tutor. Tell us about your experience, because a lot of people, well, you came from, was it Mexico?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, a lot of people criticize that people who move to this country from other countries don't want to learn the language. They don't try to learn it. What's your experience in the community, and what do you see out there as far as people's willingness to want to learn the language?
I believe people do want to learn. It's just that they have to I believe there has to be more reach out to them, and they have to come closer to them. For me, my experience was good. When I came in 1999, I only spoke about three words in English.
Really?
I couldn't understand a thing. But now it was hard work, and it is very hard work. But when you understand that without the language, you can't survive. You can't do anything without it. You can't go to the store. You can't eat lunch. You can't go to the bathroom. You can't even ask that. So it's so important. I had the opportunity to learn. I had the opportunity to be around people that spoke the language, and I work hard for it. So
what advice would you give literacy programs in teaching English as a second language, I suppose, to particularly Latinos?
Yes. Because in order to teach effectively, they must understand the culture. My advice to the literacy would to learn more about the culture. It's not just learning to speak, to show them what word, what it means, so the translation, but it's culture. One of the things that I understood, for me to be able to understand English, was to understand the culture, because as the caller earlier mentioned that in other countries when they teach you English, I had a few courses of English in Mexico, but it's not the English that you speak in America. It's completely different. It's the old English, and when I came here, I couldn't remember a thing, a single word. So most of it comes with culture. The language is, I would say, language is culture. And if you're going to be teaching someone, you must understand their culture. When you understand their culture, you will be more effective.
So you're saying not only understand that you have to teach about American culture, but understand the culture of the people that you're teaching.
Right, right. That will be my advice for the organizations that are trying to reach out to them and teach the language.
We have an email from Paige. She wants to respond to the caller from Ethiopia. She wants us to say, please tell the caller from Ethiopia that the Ethiopian Tawahedo Social Services is expanding its literacy offerings to give additional help with ESL and GEDs. The website is ethiotss.org for more information. We'll post that website on our website at wosu.org/allsides. But again, it's ethiotss.org. That is from the Tawahedo Social Services. Hopefully I'm not butchering that. That's Tewahedo Social Services. So if you want more information, go to that website or look up Ethiopian Tewahedo Social Services. 614-292-8513 if you want to give us a call, if you have any questions or comments. When you have a GED course, does it include people from all different walks of life, or do you try to segment them a little bit so they're more like situations, or do you not have that luxury anymore?
I think we don't have the luxury anymore. It's who's ever at the door that needs the help.
Yeah.
And I think you have a lot of mixed classes, both in skill level and also in composition, all the way from folks who struggle with basic skill issues all the way up to those folks who really just need a quick brush up one little tweak here or there, then they're off and running.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you have that whole range. I think if you look at the traditional delivery system in Ohio through the department, the old Department of Education, now the Board of Regents, persistence in programming was only about 55 hours per adult. So they don't stay long in programs to begin with. Part of it is they come in, they get what they need, and they go. And part of it is sometimes there's a mismatch or they don't have the time, like Dawana mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. to devote to that. So I think that's another issue that has to be looked at, is how long can you actually stay in a given program without other resources, without additional help, which is why we like that blended learner concept, where you're not just doing it in that one structured setting, but also accessing a lot of resources across the map. It's why we partner with WOSU, as a matter of fact, along with the other PBS stations in Ohio. If you go to WOSU's website and click on GED, you actually land on a place that we help fund through Kentucky Education Television. So you can study online directly through WOSU, as well as the other PBS stations. Our partners at Time Warner offer it on their digital on-demand cable system on Channel 411 here in Central Ohio. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different ways that you can access that service. So it doesn't have to be tied to just a single program or a single classroom. If you need the help, you can find it.
Getting back to what Dan was talking about earlier, there is something called the Latino lag. I don't know if it's particular to Latinos or not, but it's a lag. Can you tell us about that, Joy, what that is? Are you familiar with that?
Well, the only way I can put that into context would be to talk about it in terms of what we understand about language acquisition.
Okay.
And the fact that in many Latino cultures, education is a different kind of animal from what we're used to here. In other words, it may be a little more sporadic in some cases. It's not as consistent in some other cases, depending on the culture you're from.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that probably Dan could speak to that even better than I could. But it just means that conversational language acquisition, the talking stuff, that's the easiest part, where you can pick up the language itself. But the structured English language that you have to learn to write in, that you have to learn to take tests in, that you have to learn to work in, is a different animal completely, because it's much more difficult. We don't talk like we're talking now, like we write on paper. And so that shift back and forth between those very two different approaches always confounds English as a second language speakers.
I was going to say, I don't know why they call it the Latino lag. I would think it would be any ESL.
And we're more familiar with using a different term, but actually we see most of that with our Somali population.
Yeah.
Because they come and they're pre-literate, so we're teaching them.
They had no education in their own language.
They had no symbols to represent letters or sounds. Okay.
As Joy said, other than Bantu, which is their main language, most of the other family tribes that come in from Somali don't have a written or orthographic structure to their language at all. It's all verbal. And so that translation is even more difficult, moving that process.
So what do you do? How do you even start?
That's where it takes extensive time. We use a bilingual translator as much as possible for their paperwork and to explain to them the program. But once they're in a class or with the tutor or taking any of our services, it is all English. But you start with teaching them sounds. And helping them learn to use a pencil. You know, if you've never used a pencil to write, the mechanics of using the pencil. Things that you may think would work, such as a photo of a coffee mug to explain the word, that doesn't work because it's a two-dimensional representation of something. But if they've never used that type of system to teach, they're not accustomed to understanding that way. Anything they've ever seen has been a true visual representation of the object.
No books, no...
Right, and
right.
No coffee mugs, to be
no
honest
coffee
about
mugs,
it.
Yeah.
So it's pretty hard for that to make a dent for them. So you also have to be very basic in the language structure. So you're starting off with symbol-sound relationships.
Correct.
Phonemes. You're building consonant-vowel-consonant structures for them because their neural pathways aren't programmed yet for English language. So you have to really rebuild that whole process of moving a language through their frontal lobes, if I'm going to get fancy about it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that hard to do?
Now, I know Minnesota and Columbus, or I think it's in Minneapolis, and Columbus have two of the biggest Somali populations in the country.
It's actually Milwaukee.
Is it Milwaukee,
yeah.
Wisconsin? Okay, then you have to be at the forefront of how to teach them, correct?
Yes, you do. You have, and that's where, when we've lost some of the funding, losing some of the paid instructors was very difficult. We believe we've compensated, and we're still showing terrific results with our students, but it's only because of the increase in volunteers that can work one-on-one with an individual. It takes time. Statistically, we estimate that it'll take 6 years of consistent study for someone who comes in at a pre-literate level to gain the skill set they need to be functional.
Not necessarily GED ready.
Not GED ready. Okay. Functional literate. And it's the chances that we will be able to hold on to that student for 6 years are very, very slim. As Al mentioned earlier, 50 hours, that's a long time to hold a student in a program. They have life. They have other things that are going on and other responsibilities. So keeping them is critical to advance their learning.
You know, as I'm thinking about it, when I was looking at the list of countries that the United States was being compared to, and all the countries that went in front of the United States in terms of their literacy levels, including Georgia, you know, a former part of the Soviet chain, they are very monolithic. They don't have a lot of different cultures in their societies. They don't have a lot of different languages. They're not much of a melting pot kind of a country. So, I mean, I guess credit where credit's due for the United States, the challenge is much greater here.
I don't think very much so. And if you look at what we know from the folks that come to visit our website, we get visits from Canada, Ireland, Germany, China, India. It's just amazing how many foreign countries come into our website to study English and study language skills in American in the way we do things here in the U.S.
From across the world.
Thailand, the Maldive Islands. We see traffic on our website from every place you could possibly think of. It's absolutely amazing to see the breadth that people have to really look at what we do here in this country and how we try to tackle some of our teaching and instructional issues.
And right now at the council, we have 78 different countries represented. And when you look at that, it's like, wow, how – and 78 countries and multiple language families are there.
I love how you say that with a smile on your face. So it must be a fascinating job. I hope that you'll join us again and to talk about this because it's obviously an ongoing conversation. Pastor Dan Oziel-Vasquez, thanks for joining us, Dan.
Thank you very much for having me.
And also Duana Martin, former GED student, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Joy Watson, Executive Director of the Columbus Literacy Council, glad you could be here today.
Thank you, Ann.
And Alan Toops, Executive Director of the Ohio Literacy Network, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Ann.
And good luck in the coming year. That's all the time we have for All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.